to stay open, more open, you know, talking with the, you know, going to board meetings and, you know, finding out, well, what's going on, you know, with those things. Yeah, just getting more involved, you know. It gets harder the way things are going as well. So, you know, these are all not easy asks. Anyway, looks like we're just about out of time. Do you have one last quick thought?
Yeah, well, so let me. Can you write down my email and anyone else?
Why don't you just talk to Ty? Just stay on the line, and Ty will talk to you, because we got to get off the air right now. Oh, you want? Okay, go ahead. Okay. If you want to give out your email, do it.
P.S. The number 2 me at posteo.b as in dog, e as in echo.
Okay, we got to go.
Me at posteo.
Okay, we're out of time completely. I'm sorry to cut you off, but we're totally out of time.
You're listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM. The time is 9 a.m.
I'm Queen Ida, and you're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM on your radio. Your spot for Cajun and Zydeco music, Bon Ton Roulet.
Support for KBOO comes from its members and the nonprofit Oregon Potters Association, presenting its annual event, the Ceramic Showcase, with the Gathering of the Guilds, April 25th through 27th at the Oregon Convention Center. More info available at ceramicshowcase.com.
Hi, this is Kendall Boyson, professional life and recovery coach, and you're listening to Encouragementology, the practice of instilling hope. Hi there. Thanks for joining me. On this show, we are attempting to avoid the certainty trap by asking, are you as right as you think you are? Have you ever felt so sure you were right about something, only to later discover there was more to the story, or a completely different side you hadn't considered? That moment can be humbling, even a little uncomfortable, but it's also where growth begins. We've all been there. Standing our ground, convinced that our perspective is the correct one. Whether it's a debate about current events, a disagreement in a relationship, or simply our interpretation of a situation, we hold tightly to our beliefs. In this episode, we're diving into the human tendency to cling to certainty, even when we might not have all the facts. We'll explore the importance of self-awareness, the value of considering opposing viewpoints, and how embracing a bit of uncertainty can lead to personal growth and deeper connections with others. So let's challenge our assumptions and open the door to new perspectives. Who knows what we might discover? Let's start by calling out the very human thing we all do. We like to be right. I mean, who doesn't? Being right feels good, it's validating, it's safe, and it gives us a sense of control. But the brain takes it a step further. Scientifically speaking, our brains are wired to protect our current beliefs. We're not just thinking, we're filtering, editing, and defending. This is thanks to something called confirmation bias, which is your brain's way of saying, let's only pay attention to the stuff that proves we already know what we're talking about. Here's a real-life example. You've decided your partner never listens to you. So every time they forget something, you said, ding, 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 more proof. But when they do listen, you might not notice. Or maybe you write it off as a fluke. That's confirmation bias in action. You're scanning for evidence that supports what you already believe and quietly ignoring what doesn't fit. Then there's overconfidence bias, which is exactly what it sounds like, thinking we know more than we do. Ever found yourself mid-debate, completely certain about a fact you read online, only to later realize you misread it or, oops, it was a meme? Yeah, same. Our brains often give us the feeling of being right before we've actually done the homework. And once we're feeling confident, our openness to alternative views tends to shrink like jeans in the dryer. But it's not just about ego. This desire for certainty is deeply rooted in survival. Psychologists say we're naturally drawn to clear answers because uncertainty feels risky. It puts our brains on alert. In fact, research shows that uncertainty activates the same areas of the brain as physical pain. So when someone challenges our view, it can feel like a threat, even when it's just an opinion. Let's take another relatable example, texting. You text someone, they don't respond for hours, and suddenly your brain is like, they're mad at me. I must have said something wrong. They're probably ghosting me. Why? Because not knowing, being in that limbo of uncertainty, is uncomfortable. And your brain would rather invent a possibly incorrect explanation than sit with, I don't know. So what does this mean for us? It means being certain doesn't always mean being right. It just means we've convinced ourselves we are. That conviction might be based on solid facts or on feelings, past relationships, and even fear. But if we never pause to check those beliefs, we risk walking through life with blinders on, missing out on the nuance, the growth, and the opportunity that comes from seeing things from another angle. Now let's turn the mirror inward. It's time for some self-reflection. Think about a recent situation where you were convinced you were right. What was the topic? Who were you discussing it with? What information did you base your opinion on? Was it firsthand experience, something you read, or perhaps information from someone you trust? What was the other person's viewpoint? Now, can you understand why they might see things differently? During the discussion, were you genuinely open to hearing the other side, or were you more focused on proving your point? Really think about it. It's okay to be honest with yourself. How did the conversation end? Did you learn something new? Or did it reinforce your original belief? By engaging in this kind of exercise, you may uncover patterns in your thinking and identify areas where you could be more receptive to differing viewpoints. To gain further insight into the importance of considering multiple perspectives, let's explore the thoughts of Dr. David W. Johnson with the importance of taking the perspective of others. This is found at Psychology Today. And in this piece, it emphasizes that to assess common and opposing interests realistically, it's essential to view situations from others' viewpoints. In order to resolve conflict constructively, so that all parties are satisfied with the outcome, a person must be able to hold all the opposing ideas, positions, and perspectives in mind at the same time and still function effectively. So there are five important aspects of perspective taking. The first is realizing that everyone involved has a unique perspective. No two people will see a situation or issue in exactly the same way. Second is that a person's perspective selects and organizes what the person attends to and experiences. Because all experiences are understood within the perspective in which they are viewed, people tend to see only what their perspective allows them to see. Change a person's perspective and you change what the person attends to and the way the person interprets the events of their life. Perspectives can create bias. Out of a mass of detailed information, people tend to pick out and focus on those facts that confirm their prior perceptions, and to disregard or misinterpret those that call their perceptions into question. The third is that people can have different perspectives at different times. As your job role, experiences, assumptions, psychological states, and values change, your perspective will change. When you're hungry, for example, you notice all the food in the room. When you're not hungry, the food tends to not attract your attention. Fourth, the same message can mean two entirely different things from two different perspectives. A person's perspective largely determines how a message will be interpreted. The same message may be interpreted as friendly, teasing, or as hostile, insubordinate, depending on the perspective of the receiver. Fifth, misunderstandings often occur because we assume that everyone sees things from the same perspective as we do. If we're interested in sports, for example, we often assume that everyone's interested in sports. Or if we like horses, we assume everyone likes horses. To solve problems and resolve conflicts constructively, participants need to understand each other's perspectives. Sounds easy, right? All this requires them to see the issue from both their own and other person's perspectives. Let's talk about the power of perspective taking and why it's more than just a nice to have in tough conversations. First, when you take the time to see something from someone else's point of view, your communication becomes clearer and more thoughtful. It helps you frame your message in a way that makes sense to them, which reduces misunderstandings and keeps the conversation on track. Second, perspective taking helps you assess the situation more realistically, especially when there are competing needs or interests involved. It allows everyone to figure out which points might need to be compromised in order to move forward and where there's common ground to build on. That's the stuff real, lasting agreements are made of. Third, it widens your lens. If you truly want to influence someone, you have to understand. Really understand why their view matters to them. Feel the emotional weight behind it. That empathy is what opens the door to connection, not just persuasion. Fourth, and maybe most importantly, it makes relationships better. When someone feels seen, like you genuinely get where they're coming from, they're more likely to respect you, trust you, and work with you toward a solution that benefits both sides. Now, a quick note. If two people have completely opposing interests and there's no middle ground, perspective taking might actually increase tension. Why? Because it clarifies how different you really are. But when there are multiple layers to the issue or opportunities for creative compromise, perspective taking is where the real magic happens. All right, we've unpacked the science. We've reflected on our own habits of being absolutely sure. And now it's go time. Because knowing you might be holding a belief too tightly is one thing. Loosening your grip in real life, that's where the magic and the discomfort happens. So let's walk through a simple but powerful three-part exercise to help you practice curiosity, challenge your assumptions, and create space for growth, even when your brain is shouting, "But I'm right!" Step one, identify a sticky belief. Okay, let's think here. Think of a situation or belief where you've been digging in your heels. Think about it. Maybe it's a relationship dynamic. They never listen to me. It could be a workplace frustration. That idea will never work. A worldview. People who think that are just wrong. Okay, write it down or say it out loud. This is your sticky belief, something you've clung to without much wiggle room. Now ask yourself, where did this belief come from? Is it based on experience? Someone else's opinion? A pattern? A single moment? Okay, do you have that? Are you thinking of it that way? Let's go to step two. Zoom out for a wider view. Now that you've named the belief, it's time to shift your lens. Think like a scientist or a journalist. Curious, not conclusive. Ask yourself, what's another way to see this? What might the other person believe and why? What would I think if I were raised in a different environment? What facts or experiences might I be missing? You don't have to agree. You just have to entertain the possibility that your belief isn't the only truth in the room. This pause can be enough to soften your stance and open the door for growth. Step three, create a curiosity cue plan. Let's bring it home. Here's where we shift from reflection to real life application. The goal is to replace automatic certainty with intentional curiosity. To do that, create a curiosity cue, a phrase, a question, or even a physical action you can use the next time you feel yourself digging in. Here's some examples. That's interesting. Tell me more. Is there another angle I haven't considered? Take a breath, count to three, and then respond. Start keeping a challenged beliefs journal. Track moments when your perspective shifted and what you learn. You only need one cue, but it needs to feel natural to you. Something that reminds you in the heat of certainty to take a step back and explore. Here's the thing. You don't have to surrender your opinions or silence your voice. But if you want to grow, emotionally, intellectually, relationally, you have to stretch your mind as much as your heart. Certainty feels safe, but curiosity builds connection. And that's the goal, right? Bruce Grierson discusses how overestimating our knowledge and abilities can lead to errors in judgment, with certainty is a psychological trap, and it's time to escape, also found at Psychology Today. The willingness to actually listen to others and to display your ignorance in a world full of know-it-alls is a bold move, and now has a name, intellectual humility. It's not only a developable skill, but it could just end the culture wars. With roots in almost every major philosophical and religious tradition, IH occupies an intertidal zone of knowledge, somewhere between the bleeding obvious and the secret of life. Globally right now, there's a rise in the opposite of IH, intellectual arrogance, which makes us privilege our own positions and stubbornly refuse to entertain competing viewpoints. Democracies have a special interest in protecting and promoting the pursuit of truth. This comes from Michael Patrick Lynch, a philosopher at the University of Connecticut and the author of Know-It-All Society, Truth and Arrogance in Political Culture. But the contemporary culture machinery is geared to chase folks out of the middle ground or push experts in one area out of their lane, leading them to confidently pronounce on matters they have no business banging on about. Call it cognitive narcissism. Curious collaborative inquiry has been abandoned for the brute force of unilateral persuasion. Intellectual humility instead courts the kind of nuances that often are found in the middle ground. It also contains a strong element of respect. I respect you enough to engage with your position, and together we commit to search for truth. That comes from Rick Hoyle, a professor of psychology and neuroscience at Duke University. Okay, let's break these ideas down, get a little closer. So this idea of intellectual humility, it's the ability to recognize that your knowledge and perspective are limited. It's the understanding that as much as you think you know, you might not have the whole picture. People with intellectual humility are open to hearing other viewpoints. They're willing to admit when they're wrong, and they're curious about learning more. It's not about being unsure of everything. It's about being confident enough to say, hey, I could be wrong, and I'm open to learning. The flip side of that is intellectual arrogance, in which someone is certain they're right, even when they don't have all the facts. It's a rigid mindset that resists questioning, shuts down alternative views, and often masks insecurity with overconfidence. Instead of engaging in dialogue, an intellectually arrogant person tends to dominate or dismiss. It's less about sharing ideas and more about winning an argument. Now, cognitive narcissism takes it a step further. It's not just about being overly confident in your ideas. It's being in love with your own thinking. Someone with cognitive narcissism often believes their perspective is superior simply because it's theirs. They may crave validation or seek out only like-minded voices and become defensive when challenged. It's a blend of intellectual arrogance and ego, where learning becomes less about discovery and more about self-affirmation. So you might be thinking, do people with IH make more thoughtful decisions? Do they have stronger connections with friends and partners? Are they happier than others? Early returns say yes, yes, and yes. From the emerging data, there are 8 ideas about fostering intellectual humility. Number 1, you can't actually know when you don't know what you're talking about. Let's start with a truth bomb. We think we know more than we do. The tricky part? When we're wrong, we usually don't know it in the moment. As Catherine Schultz puts it, wrong feels exactly like being right, until, of course, we realize we're wrong. And by then, it's too late. This is the work of overconfidence bias, our brain's tendency to overestimate our smarts, our memory, and how often we're right. In one study, people estimated they were right 82% of the time in disagreements. 82! Imagine 2 people both believing they're right nearly all the time. No wonder we argue. Overconfidence doesn't just create awkward dinner table debates. It can have serious consequences. Think of Chernobyl, the Challenger explosion, the Deepwater Horizon spill. Catastrophes born from people being way too sure of themselves. So what's the alternative? Intellectual humility, a simple mindset shift that says, I might not have the full picture.
It's like standing on the edge of a canyon, looking into all the unknowns and saying, whoa, there's a lot I haven't seen yet. Number two, the road to intellectual humility is paved with curiosity. If certainty closes doors, curiosity opens them. People who are intellectually humble tend to ask more questions, seek understanding, and generally want to know what makes others tick. It's not about being right. It's about being interested. Curiosity takes courage. It lowers your guard, especially in moments of conflict. Instead of defending your worldview like a castle under siege, you ask, how did you come to see it that way? That question alone can flip the script from debate to dialogue. Here's the kicker. Studies show that only 5% of people truly feel heard after a conversation. 5%. That's 1 in 20. Imagine how much could change if we make curiosity our go-to instead of correction. Number three, not everything should be up for humble reconsideration. Let's be real. Some beliefs feel sacred, and that's normal. We all have our non-negotiables, whether it's spiritual beliefs, human rights, or personal values. The goal of intellectual humility isn't to question everything or become indecisive about what matters to us. It's about checking in and asking, why is this belief off limits for discussion? And making sure our list of untouchables isn't growing so long that we can't talk about anything anymore. We need space for disagreement and some healthy tension. That's what keeps dialogue honest and society moving. Number four, a conflict resolution tool? Maybe, maybe not. Conflict isn't the enemy. Apathy is. As one author put it, the opposite of conflict isn't harmony, it's indifference. Disagreements done well are signs of a healthy society. And here's the cool part. When people write about a topic, they tend to double down on their beliefs. But when they talk about it with others, they're more likely to reconsider their position. Conversation, especially the messy kind, creates space for growth. We often argue with cartoon versions of each other in our heads. You know, the exaggerated villain who thinks the opposite of you must hate what you love. But when you sit across from someone and actually hear their story, the caricature fades fast. There's a nonprofit called Braver Angels that brings people from opposite sides of the political spectrum face to face. And guess what? When they sit down together, ask questions, and listen, they discover unexpected common ground. They don't always agree, but they understand. The takeaway? Proximity breeds understanding. Online, we argue with avatars. In person, we connect with humans. Number six, there is such a thing as too much IH. Now, too much humility can be a thing. There's a difference between being open and shrinking yourself. Intellectual humility isn't about saying, oh, I know nothing. It's about aligning your confidence with your actual knowledge. So if you're a brain surgeon, please don't defer to your Uber driver on craniotomy techniques, okay? A helpful check-in? Am I the right size in this conversation? Not inflated, not invisible, just appropriately confident with room to grow. Number seven, IH is something humans will always have that even the smartest machine learning will not. Fun fact, artificial intelligence can make predictions and spit out facts, but it cannot do humility. It doesn't question its assumptions. It doesn't pause to wonder, could I be wrong? That's a uniquely human skill, and it's more valuable than ever. So while AI might ace a test, only we can look someone in the eye and say, "Tell me more. I'd like to understand." And number 8, people arrive at truth collaboratively. Last but not least, we never think alone. Every idea, every insight, every belief you hold is built with the help of others. Books, conversations, observations, community. Knowledge is a shared effort. It's more like a group project than a personal trophy. So let's build our beliefs like sandcastles, crafted with care, open to reshaping, and not so precious that we panic when the tide comes in. Because that tide, it's just new information. And if we welcome it with curiosity instead of fear, we'll keep learning, growing, and connecting. If you want to share Encouragementology with a friend who needs to know they're not alone in this journey of self-discovery, you can visit encouragementology.com or anywhere you stream your content to receive this episode and all others. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram for additional encouragement throughout the week. So I challenge you, identify one belief or opinion you hold with absolute certainty and actively seek out information or perspectives that challenge it. Embrace the discomfort of uncertainty and observe how this openness can lead to deeper understanding and personal growth. Remember, true wisdom often begins with the acknowledgement of what we don't know.